This is Katie Breedeman for The Voice of Charity. Award-winning author and Chicago native Meg Kissinger is going to be the keynote speaker at the 2024 Loss Blossoms of Hope Brunch on April 28th. Listen into this podcast as Meg joins me to discuss that upcoming event and her recent book, While You Are Out, An Intimate Family Portrait of Mental Illness in an Era of Silence. You know, Meg, While You Are Out continues to be recognized around the nation as an important new memoir. It is featured among the New York Times Editor's Choice list and the Los Angeles Times Book Pick list. And one review said, "This book is a must-read for anyone who has experienced mental illness or anyone who knows someone who has." In other words, this book is for everyone. Meg, can you start us off by telling at what point in your career that you decided to write this book?
Sure, Katie. This has been rolling around inside of my soul for many years, most specifically, you know, right after my brother Danny died. I was lucky enough to have a career as a reporter where I was able to go out and kind of ask questions of people living with mental illness in ways that I really didn't feel like I could ask my brothers and sisters. Isn't that strange? But it's kind of human nature. We're sometimes too afraid to ask the most intimate questions of the people that we love the most.
Makes sense.
So, I was able to kind of satisfy my curiosity as a journalist and as a reporter. And I was lucky to work at a newspaper where my wonderful editor, George Stanley, a good Catholic man, was very committed to the idea of exploring the discrimination and the barriers to care that people with mental illness suffer. So anyway, after doing that for a long time, 25 years or so, I just decided the most impactful way that I can tell this story is to turn the notebook on myself and my family and really go after what it is that we went through in hopes that we could be a candle in the window, you know, and a little beacon for others who are going through what we went through. So from start to finish, you know, I say that it was 25 years cooking inside of me, but pedal to the metal, you know, fingers on the keyboard, nose on the screen, maybe two and a half years or so.
Well, you sure are helping so many people already, Meg. Can we go back to your travels around the United States, discovering, you know, America's mental health system? You really had some quite surprising discoveries. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, the first thing that I learned is that the mental health system is not a system. You know, it's a siloed group of entities that don't work together. The definition of a system is, you know, entities that coordinate to work together, and almost nothing about the mental health world does. So by that, I mean, it's very difficult to, first of all, find a mental health care provider. We have a great lack of psychiatrists and mental health professionals. We need many more people to go into that field. So I encourage all your listeners who are considering a career in that to go ahead and do that. And especially, you know, providers of color and people from different backgrounds. And then you have the insurance companies, which for so long just flat out refused mental health care. Mental health was really considered separate from other forms of health, and it's really not. The more that we're getting to know about it, the more we see that somebody with schizophrenia is just as endangered, or depression is just as in danger as somebody with cancer or heart disease. So what I saw that never ceased to shock and outrage me was the disregard for people with mental illness as full-on human beings. And so much discrimination, Katie, you know, so much that we need to do to treat these poor souls as human beings, God's children that need the care that we afford, as I said, like cancer patients and heart patients.
And in that regard, are there any people that you met along the way or any stories that you covered that were especially memorable for you, Meg?
Sure. I talk about a couple of them in the book, but I'll just give you a quick thumbnail sketch of two. One is a lady named Georgia Rawlings from Chicago, I might add. Anyway, I met Georgia in a laundromat in Milwaukee, and it's a broken down old laundromat in a rough part of town. And I could tell right away that she was a funny lady. She was just holding court and speaking very boisterously. And anyway, I just knew that she seemed like my kind of gal, and she was really funny. I was at the time working on some stories about the abysmal housing conditions for people who were once institutionalized, but when we began to close down these long-standing asylums, people were let out, but which was in many ways a good thing. But what was not good was that there was no healthier or safe place for many of these people to go. So anyway, here's Georgia standing in a laundromat holding court, and I went up to interview her about an awful place across the street where she, as it turned out, she had lived. And we came to just in conversation, it came out that she was from, of all places, Wilmette,
Oh my.
where I grew up. Katie, where you grew up. Anyway, I pushed her like Elaine in Seinfeld and said, "Shut up." And she said, "Will you shut up?" Anyway, we became she became a great source for me. But the most remarkable thing is, as we got to talking, and she said, when we finally discovered that we probably grew up about 5 blocks from one another, and then she stopped and she said, "Kissinger, your last name's Kissinger." And she leaned in closer, and she looked at me and she said, "You know, you and your sister Nancy have the same sad brown eyes." And I just about fainted.
Oh,
So my
wow.
sister Nancy, yeah, my sister Nancy had died many years earlier by suicide. And Georgia and she knew one another. And I just thought, well, if that isn't a metaphor for, you know, your brother's keeper, here is this lady who easily could have been my sister Nancy, who I was looking at first as this kind of pathetic soul that was in need of great help. Anyway, Georgia and I became fast friends. You know, I wrote about her, and then we became such good pals that I no longer wrote about her because I didn't want that conflict of interest. She sadly died maybe like 10 years later, and her sisters kindly asked me to give her eulogy, and she became kind of more than kind of, she became a dear friend. And the second kind of remarkable story is a guy who lived not far from me here in Milwaukee, just this a quirky little eccentric guy who used to call me in the newsroom all the time just to talk. People are lonely, and sometimes they have no place to turn. So they'll call a newsroom because they know that we're in there 24 hours a day, whatever. Somebody's always going to be answering the phone. So this guy and I kind of struck up a little telephone conversation friendship over the span of maybe 10 or 15 years. Anyway, his name was Jim Hankin, and I learned so much from him. He also died sadly. You know, people who live with serious mental illness, their lifespan is so much shorter than the normal lifespan. But with Jim, I just learned he had such a zest for life, and he was so thoughtful. He would call my kids on their birthdays and sing happy birthday to them in a Donald Duck voice. But you know, I think the way that we perceive often people with serious mental illness is we're fearful of them, or we're grossed out by them, or just don't want to look in their direction. But I have found that when you really get to know people who are suffering on a deeper level and spend some time with them, you know, you'll find that often they're the most loving, caring, tender, and really, in George's case, hilarious people that you'll meet. As you mentioned, I'm from a big old family. I was the fourth of eight kids, which made me the monkey in the middle and always curious. My mom and dad were just good, loving people, really funny. They were smart. They were kind. Oh, there they are. That's so fun. I love that picture. That picture's on my bedroom wall. I just love it. It captures the spirit of my mom and dad. That's my sister Molly on the side there. Anyway, as the years rolled along, it became apparent that my mother suffered from depression and anxiety. and was sometimes gone. She had a lot of kids in short order and not a lot of help. Her own mom had died and she didn't have any sisters. And my dad traveled a lot for work. So it was a lot. As you, I'm just looking at those pictures. I'm
Beautiful
just thinking
big
of all the
family.
laundry she did. Oh my gosh. Anyway, as we went on and growing up, it was clear that mental illness, you know, was something that was a part of our family as well. In addition to our freckles and our penchant for sassy jokes, we also struggled with depression and anxiety. And my sister Nancy was really greatly affected, and she ended up taking her own life. We now know that she had bipolar. Those were words that we didn't even talk about in the day because we didn't know. There she is. I'm giving her a big smooch. She was a glamorous lady. Anyway, she died when she was 24. And then many years later, my youngest brother, Danny, also died, but also by suicide. So it's a family curse. And there's Danny. Oh, that's he's got bad hair there.
Handsome young man.
He was really cute. That's a funny picture. I think that's from his eighth grade, his St. Francis eighth grade picture. Ooh, there's yours truly.
Yes.
Anyway, so they were that was, you know, having grown up in that the family, you know, being marred by that tragedy and again not having the words to talk about it, but also being the curious monkey in the middle, you know, I set out to find out what it was, you know, what and again have these conversations with people who could explain things in ways that I understood, because my own family, we struggled to have those conversations, which was pretty typical. It wasn't anything nefarious or mean-spirited. It was just the way that it was. And I feel very fortunate, as I said, to have been able to have had a career that helped me process that, and help try to figure out. And so then that's why I wrote the book, is I wanted to share what I learned, you know, as a journalist with others who are struggling with trouble in their family too.
Thank you for listening to this Voice of Charity podcast. Each show airs live Tuesday mornings at 8:30 on WNDZ 750 AM in Chicago, with a simultaneous live stream on YouTube and Facebook at Catholic Chicago. We invite you to learn more about ways to get involved at Catholic Charities by visiting our website, catholiccharities.net, or by sending an email to partners@catholiccharities.net. Join us as we continue to improve lives and nourish spirits across Cook and Lake Counties.